See, here is a good example, by the way. Right? You look at these terms, you think, okay, Hashem has a Ratzon, He has a Chachma, He has a Bina, He has a Das. It's different parts of His personality. This is a good example. These definitions describe us, it doesn't describe Him. And that's what's confusing. Because it says, and that is the gewaldige chiddush of chapter 51 and 52. That this has nothing to do with Ein Sof. Just like all the divisions and compartments in the organs and all the compartments and chambers in the brain have nothing to do with the soul itself. We can appreciate the revolution of the Alter Rebbe here. It has nothing to do with the Ein Sof. The Ein Sof you can define as being divided into Ratzon, Chachma, Bina, Das. In fact, for the Ein Sof we have no vocabulary. However, Hashem projected Himself in terms that are conceivable by us, in humanly conceivable terms, or rather, in He projected Himself in a fashion that we should be able to relate to something of His. And this is all part of the Ur.
And even if we're not, it's still happening.
So the Chachma is true. It's true. Of course Chachma reflects Him. But Chachma is not He. And to say Chachma is He is just like saying the ray that comes into this room from the sun, that is the sun. Is it false? It's not false. Is it a fantasy? It's not a fantasy. It really comes from the sun. Part of the sphere of the sun includes the capacity to extend the ray into a room on 16th Avenue in Borough Park. That's true. But that's that does not reflect or portray or encapsulate the essence. I'm just giving an example. This is a good example for this. And therefore, the Ein Sof includes Ratzon and Chachma and Bina. And therefore, even when there is a level where we call Ratzon Yisbarach, the Ein Sof fills that level. And Ratzon is submerged in that level. And therefore, Ratzon doesn't assume a distinct identity in that level. And the same is true with everything else. Now, what is interesting here is, if you ever saw a tree of the spheres, if you ever saw a tree of the spheres, usually 10 spheres. So there's two ways in which the spheres are enumerated. Sometimes you'll have Das and Kesser will be deleted, which is usually the system that Alter Rebbe has in his books, including in the Tanya in chapter 3. So you have Chachma Bina Das, that's Meichen, and then Chesed Gvur Teferes, that's Achay Yisayid Malchus. Earlier Kabbalah, you usually don't have Das. You have Keser, Chachma Bina, Chesed Gura Teferis. Here, the Alter Rebbe brings all four together and says they're all part of Meichen. Now, Ratzon is usually identified with Keser. Keser means a crown. It's basically above the head. We call it the global origin, or some people translate it as the superconscious forces. It's the will, the power of will in the soul. And Alter Rebbe here includes it with Meichen. Now, very briefly, what is the reason that Das is sometimes counted and Keser is not counted? So the reason is as follows. They can't be counted together, Keser and Das. The Lashon in Chassidus is, the term for it is, Ksha Keser Nimne Na Das Nimne, Ksha Das Nimne Na Keser Nimne. When Keser is counted, you delete Das. When Das is counted, you delete Keser. There are a few explanations for it. What I want to share with you today is as follows. This evening is this one. Very interesting one. When you count Das, we are discussing the spheres from an inner subjective point of view. When we count Keser, we're discussing the tree of spheres from an outer objective point of view. Now, when you're discussing it from an outer objective point of view, you naturally don't have Das. When you're discussing it from an inner subjective point of view, you can't talk about Ratzon. Chachman bin is not a problem. Chachman is conception, bin is comprehension. What Das is personal identification. When you're talking about an objective an outside view, naturally das is missing. So you can't. That's why in the trees you don't have both. And when you're talking from a personal subjective experience, you never identify the ratzon. Keser is the hardest thing to identify subjectively. People go to therapy for 50 years to find out what their ratzon is. That's the truth. Why? When you're in your own body, you can't figure it out. Ratzon is, what is your real will? Ratzon is not what I would like to want or what I understand I should want. Ratzon is, what are my real wills? What are my deepest wills? What are my deepest fears? And so on and so forth. That all belongs, the driving was behind everything. That's why Ratzon is connected to the superconscious. It may remain in the super attics of our consciousness throughout our entire life. But over here, that's not relevant to the Alter Rebbe's discussion here. That's why in other chapters in Tanya, he won't combine both together. That is only when he's talking about the faculties of the soul vis-a-vis a person experiencing them or relating to them. But here he's talking about from a cosmic perspective. So generally speaking, Ratzon and Das all go into the category of Meichen. So what happens is as follows. He says, it's these faculties, so to speak. It's a divine attribute of will, of Chachma, of Bina, and Adas. The brain, the divine brain, that is the home for the general divine Ur, energy and vitality that is relevant to all of the worlds. And Alter Rebbe adds, V'heinein amulubashim b'teiro mitzvisa. In Tanya, the Alter Rebbe doesn't drift too far away from this. And these faculties, he says, you don't have to take a spaceship and travel 10 trillion light years away to find Ratzon Chachma Bina V'Das, but they, the divine will, conception, comprehension, and application, are enclosed and expressed in Torah and in mitzvahs. Because what are mitzvahs? Mitzvahs essentially convey, they outline Hashem's will. What is Torah? Torah conveys and outlines, it captures Hashem's wisdom. Hashem's, so to speak, cognitive experiences or cognitive thought process, if you could say that. That is Torah. You want to know, and Tanya says the Torah is higher than mitzvahs, but we see that Kesed is higher than Chachma. It's a good question. It's not for now. It's a good question. It's a very good question. So what do we have from here? What is the conclusion ultimately? The conclusion is that Torah and mitzvahs, if you want to have the best definition of a Torah and mitzvahs, it's the cosmic brain. Just as on a microcosmic level, without the brain, the body could never experience the soul. And therefore the body, firstly, cannot live. And the body cannot function. And the body cannot operate and maximize its potentials. The brain is that bridge which, first of all, picks up and becomes the home and the dwelling place for the energy of the soul that is relevant to the body. And then the brain transmits it to each organ according to its capacity and its anatomy and its cellular structure and so on and so forth. This is also true about Torah and mitzvahs. Torah and mitzvahs, which is the divine will and wisdom, that is the place where the essential manifestation of the entire stream of vitality, the Ein Sof, the light of the Ein Sof that is relevant to all the worlds, that's where it dwells, in Torah and mitzvahs. And that becomes the bridge for every single word's vitality, for every single organ, and for every single limb. As he will continue in the chapter to explain this in detail, and also explain that every world has its own Torah, and therefore the Torah of that world becomes the brain of that particular world. Now, right away, I think we can have an understanding that what Alter Rebbe is saying by remembering the role of the brain. The more a body is connected and in sync with its brain, the more the body is functional, organized, and efficient. What happens when, heaven forbid, a certain region of the human brain gets damaged, or there is a blemish, a flaw in the connection between a certain part of the body and the brain? It's a tragedy. When a certain region of the brain gets damaged, all the elements of the body that are connected and are controlled and are governed by that particular region of the brain are totally impaired. And sometimes totally not functional, depends on the extent of the damage and the location of the damage, and so on and so forth. So what is the Alter Rebbe saying? If you divorce the world from Torah, you have a body without a brain. And if you think about it, it's a very interesting insight. It's a very interesting way how to describe Torah and mitzvahs. From a literal point of view, take a body without a brain. It has no direction. Even if the body is alive, but its connection to the brain is impaired, the signals are not coming through, or a part of the brain is impaired, whatever it is, the body may be alive physically, but the body lacks symmetry. The body lacks organization, efficiency, functionality. Sometimes in one particular element, sometimes in many elements, when we all know the tragic symptoms of a stroke and so on and so forth, where a part or a region of the brain gets impaired, and the entire part of the corresponding part of the body, the paralleling part of the body, gets impaired or paralyzed. So the world without Torah doesn't have a particular direction. Now this is true both in an individualistic religious way and in a collective way. Individualistically, it means as follows. If it comes the 15th day of Nisan, the 14th day of Nisan, before Pesach, a piece of dough, flour and water, really doesn't care, or doesn't say, it doesn't state clearly that it cares whether you take it and you make from it matzah, or you make from it, you allow the yeast to rise, and you make from it chametz. A piece of wool that you take over the sheep really does not direct you and tell you, make for me tzitzis, don't make for me a handkerchief. Your checkbook will never tell you. It'll never say, Shimon, David, Chaim, Yosef, don't use me for a destructive purpose, use me to give charity. The world remains a neutral, very passive, inanimate being. Torah and mitzvahs is not passive. Torah and mitzvahs is very active. It has an opinion on everything, and on every person, and on every element of the person's life. And it communicates in a very active way its vision, its commandments, its directions, and its blueprint. It doesn't remain passive and indifferent. Do with me whatever you want. Do with people whatever you want. Do with yourself whatever you want. The world is a body. Torah and mitzvahs are the brain. They have particular directions and functions for every single part of their body. And there's not one detail of the body that escapes the authority and the scope, the Weltanschauung of the brain. On a deeper level, you could say, what is the world like without Torah and mitzvahs? What is the world? If there wouldn't be a concept like Torah and mitzvahs, what is the world like? It's like a brain with body without a brain. In the sense, even if the body is physically alive, and in that sense, the Torah gives the world life, whether the world likes it or not. But on a more developed level, a body in which the connection to the brain is impaired, or a part of the brain is impaired, such a body lacks direction. And a world without Torah lacks direction, it lacks purpose, it lacks meaning, it lacks destiny, it lacks symmetry. What does Torah and mitzvahs do? Torah and mitzvahs don't just address the world. Torah and mitzvahs give the universe the dignity of purpose. Torah talks about the world as it ought to be, as it is supposed to be. What is mitzvahs? Mitzvahs are the tools that we do, that we implement in order to bring the world to that place that the Torah wants it to go to. So Torah and mitzvahs don't see the world as just an inanimate place. Torah gives it the dignity of purpose. Torah sees it as a unified organism. Torah sees it as one big a cosmos that is leading somewhere. It gives it dignity, meaning. There is symmetry, there's organization. Every detail fits into the picture. And Torah is the blueprint of what is supposed to be. Torah is the manual. And mitzvahs is the actual prescription, how to get the body there.
Right.
Now, what is the world without Torah? Very good. So it's very hard to give it to give a physical visualization, but I think there have been novels or tales describing the situation. Imagine all of the limbs of the body. One way they wake up in the morning and they say, listen, our brain is old. Our brain is 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years old. The brain doesn't know what it's doing. It's time that we should take over. I don't know if it ever happened in history, but it's like Cain's mutiny. Cain mutiny, right? Where the ship is taken over by... they decide that the captain went insane. You decide your captain went insane, and the little children on the ship take over the ship. Now, apparently, it may seem like a good idea. What does the brain know about the toe? The toe knows about the toe. But the truth is, the toe knows nothing about the toe. The brain knows about the toe. And if the body would do that, it would create a churban. It would destroy the entire body. And that's true about our life. What we maybe can do in our body and our brain, we can do in the cosmic body and the cosmic brain. The entire world and our own identities included are the body of the cosmic brain, which is Torah and mitzvahs. Sometimes we wake up in the morning and we say, brain, you've served me well for quite a few years, but you're old. You're 3,300 years old. That's it. It's time for us to do our own thing. And that's what really happens in people's lives constantly. The body has taken over and dismissed the cosmic brain. Jews have done it. Lahavdil, non-Jews have done it. And just allowed the brain to do their own thing based on their own whim. But what happens is the brain is never in the position of knowing who it is, what is its real function, and what is its real purpose. And what are the things that will allow it to maximize its potentials and the things that will cause it to destroy its potentials. However, when the brain submits, when the body submits to the brain, it's not submission in the sense that it's repressing its identity to accept upon itself the sovereignty of a foreign king. On the contrary, when it accepts the authority of the brain, it is allowing its true self to come out, because the brain is the essence of every single part of the body. The central nervous system is connected to every part of the body. The brain allows its true energy, its true identity to be expressed and to run it. And then the body becomes in sync with who it really is, with what it was created for, with what it was designed to do. And then the limbs of the body don't get into depression, because they sense their purpose, they sense their dignity, they sense their symmetry, and they sense their indispensability. I was thinking that the brain is very complicated, and the Torah is also very complicated, and there are different parts of Torah that address different parts of the brain. So we know that in clinical neurology, there is an interesting, although a rare case. We experience our vision in a very... uncompounded way. For example, if you go out to the street now and you see a red car driving on 16th Avenue, what you think you saw is a red car in motion. But really the brain doesn't experience it that way. There are different regions of the brain. One region of the brain experiences a car. Another region of the brain experiences color, red. Another region of the brain experiences motion. And the brain processes our apparently uncompounded vision in three different regions, and then the brain decodes the signals that it has processed through our, what are they called, photosensors, through the cells in our eye, in our retina, that receive the vision. The brain processes it in different regions, decodes it, and tells us swiftly, in a fraction of a second, you have just seen a red car driving 80 miles per hour. But you didn't see a red car driving miles. You saw red, you saw a car, a substance, a physical substance. You saw red, and you saw motion. It's three things, and the brain brings it together. Now, there are situations where one region in the brain is impaired, heaven forbid. So these people see substances clearly. They also see color clearly. But that region that interprets motion is impaired. And therefore, they don't see motion. So for these people, and this is a reality, this is not a fantasy, for them to cross the street is extremely dangerous. Because since they don't see motion, the red car that a second ago seemed 10 blocks away is suddenly on their head. These people, for example, you should never ask to pour you a cup of tea. Because when they pour the tea, they do not distinguish. Their brain doesn't have the ability to decode motion. So they see tea. They may see the color of the tea. Well, water doesn't have a color. But if you already put in the essence there, they may see the color of the tea, but they don't see the motion. So they're pouring and pouring and pouring and pouring the tea, and suddenly the entire table is flooded with tea water, and they don't know why. They're incapable of appreciating movement of any kind. Now, to apply this spiritually, we have this also in the cosmic brain as well. For such people, life is real, but life consists of a series of still shots. There is no continuity, and there is no cause where one cause produces an effect, and that produces another cause, and that produces another effect. And the same is true, you see, that sometimes a Jew, for example, could be in touch with certain parts of Torah, but he's detached from other parts of Torah. So we have one part of our brain functioning well and another part of our brain not functioning well. So you have, for example, Jews who appreciate cars. They appreciate the color of cars. But they don't appreciate movement, which means they appreciate the fact that the world has a design as expressed in Torah. Not only that, they appreciate the fact that the world ought to be constructed into a particular reality and has a particular destiny and has a particular design based on Torah and mitzvahs. What sometimes we don't experience is the fact that the world is going anywhere. An integral part to understanding history from a Jewish perspective, particularly from a Kabbalistic, from a Hasidic perspective, is that every single moment of history is a continuation of the previous moment and is an introduction to the next moment. And there's not one moment in your life that is not leading to the end goal of history, which is that the entire body should reflect in perfect sync the vision of the brain, the vision of Torah and mitzvahs. And every moment that we have is really a process. It's a journey. But if this part of our brain is impaired, everything is static. Now, let's think about ourselves. Do we experience every moment of our life as leading up and creating a situation that is leading up to the ultimate destiny of the body of history? This is galus. If we would, all of the symptoms of galus would be eliminated. And I mean the psychological symptoms. Boredom, anxiety, and depression. What do they come from? They come from life being experienced in a static fashion. As still shots. Imagine you would have this part of your brain working. You would see, I ended up in a gas station for 3 hours. I ended up in traffic in the highway. I got delayed in an airport. I have to deal with these insurance companies and these doctor bills and these problems and these mortgages and these banks and these burdens and these... History is moving. Every moment is creating a situation where you're progressing towards the ultimate vision of the creator of the cosmic brain and the creator of the cosmic body. And there's a special part of Torah that addresses motion. There's a part of Torah that addresses color. There are people that have motion, but they have no color in their Yiddishkeit. No color. No diversity. No colorfulness. And so on and so forth. But this is the point Alter Rebbe is making. That Torah and Mitzvot is the cosmic brain, which houses in it the entire divine energy and design and function that relates to all of the worlds and everything that is contained within the worlds.
How do you have a sense of motion? What part of Torah gives you that sense of motion?
Chassidus.
what gives you the color? Also Chassidus.
That would lead to what you would call cosmic or God consciousness. God consciousness.
This is called God consciousness when you're in touch with your brain, yeah. But sometimes the body decides we're going to make a revolt. We're going to throw over the brain and we'll do our own thing. And the body has done it throughout history. This is the story of history. What is Mashiach? Mashiach is the moment that the body becomes in perfect sync with the brain. Huh? Well, first the body limbs have to stop fighting with each other. Right.
In other words, the world has not learned the Torah.
Right. And that's why the wolf is going to live with the lamb. Why? Because the Yerushalmi says in Masechta Nedarim, we discussed this in chapter 32, when I hit another human being, I hit another Jew. So the Yerushalmi says, it reminds one of, imagine your finger and burns itself, God forbid. Your finger burns itself. So the other finger, the other hand, gets so upset with this finger for putting its hand near the fire, it's burning mad because it causes pain in the whole body. So it starts whipping the left hand, it whips it and whips it and makes it bleed and impairs it. Why not? The answer is because it's your hand. It's your hand. Until we start experiencing other people as part of our body, we haven't connected with our brain. The brain is what allows one hand to feel that it is the right arm over the left arm. Without the brain, this is a klotz and this is a klotz. It's just two pieces of inanimate matter that are disconnected. What type of relationship do we have? Just because we're 1 foot apart? So what? The hand becomes a philosopher. Since when does 1 foot apart mean that we're connected? On the contrary, maybe we're two different worlds and we have two different philosophies and we have two different agendas. And in the name of open-mindedness, we should go on our own way. It's possible. You can't dispute that philosophy, but it means there's a tragic disconnection from the brain. I'll just conclude. Next, in the continuation of the chapter, the Alter Rebbe really goes into this concept in great detail. I mean, it's not it's pretty complicated, but the main point is this distinction that we have to make between the Ein Sof and the Ein Sof as it's experienced. The truth is that from a Hasidic point of view, the story of history is reconciling the two elements of God, so to speak. Hashem as He is, and Hashem as we perceive Him. The Ein Sof, and the Ein Sof as we experience it.
Through history, it's trying to move closer,
to bring in the Ein Sof itself into the perception of the world. That's what Alter Rebbe called Dira B'Tachtonim. Make this world a home for him. What does it mean, a home for him? In chapter 36. Chapter 36, he asks that question. I want to conclude with a story. It just reminded me, because Alter Rebbe writes in chapter 2 of Tanya that the Roshei Alfa Yisrael, the Tzaddikim and Talmidei Chachamim, the Rebbes, the great scholars, the Torah giants of each generation, they are the brain of that generation. Just like each world has a brain, each generation has a brain or brains. And that is why the Torah that gives direction to the entire brain on a cosmic level and on a historical level, in each generation you have those human beings that embody Torah so deeply that they actually are the brains that can sense and direct and guide every part of the body to its particular function and mission. And when they look at the Jewish people or they look at the world, they see a different world. When the brain looks at the toe, it sees a toe that is one with the entire body and a toe that has the dignity of purpose. It's not just a toe. It's a toe that is indispensable to your entire organism. It's a toe that is indispensable to life and therefore indispensable to your mission in life. So there's a story they tell about the holy Reb Mendel of Haradok. He was a mentor of the Alter Rebbe, the oldest student of the Maggid. After the Maggid passed away, the Alter Rebbe accepted him as his spiritual mentor. The Alter Rebbe refused to become an official Rebbe in Russia until Reb Mendel HaRadok passed away in Israel, in Tovkuf Memches. He passed away in Tveri, in Tiberias. He's buried there. Tovkuf Memches is 1788. The Alter Rebbe refused. Tovkuf Memches, the Alter Rebbe was an older man. He refused to accept officially the mantle of leadership until Reb Mendel passed away. And then Reb Avram Kalisker, whom I mentioned before, urged him, and other people in Eretz Yisrael to accept it officially. In any case, Reb Mendel HaRadok lived, I mentioned, in Tiberias, in Tveria. One day, a meshuganer, a madman, an imbecile, an insane individual, went up to the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem, to the Har HaZeisim, with a big, big shofar, with a big ram's horn, and he started to blow the shofar. The entire Jerusalem became ecstatic. They felt, rumor had it, that the prophet Elijah came to Jerusalem. He went onto the Mountain of Olives and he blew the shofar, heralding, announcing, declaring that the Messiah is here. So you could understand how rumor had it in Jerusalem. I mean, Jews went ecstatic. And basically the man was standing on the mountain and blowing and blowing and blowing away. He wasn't getting tired. So it was mamash hasimah. I mean, Meshugoyim do have power and they don't get as tired and exhausted as other people. So he really wasn't getting exhausted. He was blowing and blowing and blowing away. And the rumor had it all over Jerusalem. Elijah is here. Mashiach is coming. I mean, that's it. That's the end of Golos, the end of exile. Jews spread rumors fast, so the rumors started to travel from one city to another city to another city, and a while later it arrived in Tveria. And one of the followers of Reb Mendel of Haradok ran into the home of the Rebbe. He said, "The Rebbe, you wouldn't believe it. They say that Elijah the prophet is standing on the Mountain of Olives and he's blowing the shofar, heralding the coming of the Mashiach." And the Jew, this chassid, was breathless. He was excited, his heart was pumping in an extraordinary swift fashion. I mean, he was just beyond himself. I mean, imagine you would come in and announce that Mashiach is here. So the Mendel was sitting and learning. He was sitting at his desk, at his table, and he was learning. He stood up, he went over to the window, he opened the window, he stretched out his head from the window, and he went, he sniffed, he gave a smell. And a tear came down his eye, and he told his disciple, he said, "Nay, leider, Mashiach is nicht gekommen. Sadly, Mashiach didn't come yet." Now, I mean, we don't have to say at the end of the story that obviously Reb Mendel was right. I mean, we know that. Sadly, he was right. So Chassidim asked the question, Memanavshach, whichever way you look at it, it doesn't make sense. If Reb Mendel could sniff the ear and sense if Mashiach is here or not, what did he have to open the window? If he has to hear the news like everybody else has to hear it, and that's why he couldn't sense it right away in his room, he had to go to the window. So what does it help opening the window and smelling the air outside? And Chassidim answered, Reb Mendel couldn't sniff the air in his own home because the atmosphere, the ambiance in his own home was always permeated with the Mashiach energy. In Reb Mendel's home, the energy of Mashiach was present. The aviray, the spirit, the atmosphere, the ambiance of Mashiach was there. So Reb Mendel would smell in his home, he would say, Mashiach is here. Reb Mendel had to open the window and he had to sniff the air outside. And he felt that the ear is not Mashiach the cat. And he sighed and he shed a tear and he said, unfortunately, it hasn't reached it yet. Now, what is the deeper meaning behind this story? It's the same idea we're conveying here. Mashiach is that moment where the cosmic brain and the cosmic body are in sync with each other. And the body reflects the brain perfectly, superbly. The nervous system is not impaired, the brain is not impaired, and certainly the brain hasn't been expelled and the body hasn't taken over. For the Reish Bnei Yisrael, for the Jew, like Reb Mendel HaRadaka, who even in the time of exile is a brain, which means he looks at life, he views the world, he views human beings, he views the Jewish people from the brain perspective. So he lives in the Mashiach atmosphere. His world, his consciousness is totally on a different level. When he looks at another person, he sees the inner divinity of that person. He sees that person from the brain perspective, from the godly perspective, from the soul perspective. When he sees the world, he sees it from that perspective. When he sees himself from that perspective. But everybody knows that that is not Mashiach. Mashiach is that the world, the physical body will become a vessel for the brain. So you have to smell outside. And he sniffed outside and he said that the aroma is not that aroma yet. Have a good night and a brain-like week. Yeah, same person. The Mendel HaRadaka and the Mendel of Vitebsk is the same person. Same thing, yeah. He experienced the brain, so the touching and tasting was the same. Similar idea. Since the Sarif experiences the body as it's in the brain the chushim is chabris l'makamach. So he can hold it, the sugar in his hand and it melts in his mouth. Yeah. We'll learn next week. Torah mitzvahs is really higher than the soul that comes into the body. And therefore it serves as the brain. The soul that permeates the world is called Shekhinah. Torah is higher than the Shekhinah. Since it's higher than the Shekhinah, it can serve as a bridge for the Shekhinah to the rest of the world.
Seems to be one of the problems. A lot of sound.
So, into the Santa Indian, Dalton Rebbe is explaining a very sadistic Indian. You understand that? The perception is not a sheker. You feel the perception is a lie. It's not a lie. I'll give you an example, yeah? It's an example of half the Lalaf of dollars. If there's a story they gave blind people, they asked them to report what they feel when they touch an elephant. You know the story. What happened? There were three blind people.
Right, so one touched the tail, the other touched the leg, and the other touched the trunk. One said it's a snake, one said it's a pillar, the other said it's a stringy thing.
It's a what?
Stringy thing.
So one person touched the tail, and he said it's a stringy thing. Another person touched the nose, and he said it's a snake. Another person touched the trunk of the elephant, the leg, and what did he say? It's a pillar. So who is right? Now this is not a complete metaphor, really, because they were all wrong. Yeah? But if one would describe it as a tail, and one would describe it as a leg, and one would describe it as a nose, it's different descriptions, but they're all right. I hate to give an example of an elephant that I'm trying to bring out, because since they're blind, they don't see the elephant. This person senses a nose. Of course. Look at the muscle. Does the soul doesn't have the power to invigorate a body? Of course it does. Is that the soul? No. Of course Hashem has chachma bina das. Hishtanshlus means Hashem being experienced in different ways. Of course. But as it's in Hashem, they're not distinct elements. They're not divisible elements. Chachma versus Bina versus Das. It doesn't describe the totality of him. And in the presence of his totality,
you say that there's a characteristic of God.
You can't use the word characteristic there. You can't use the word characteristic. It's Pashat B'Tachlis Apshittas. And since it's Pashat B'Tachlis Apshittas, it has this capacity also. That's what it means, lowered himself. Lowered himself means, lowers himself means he allows different levels of perception to experience different elements of him. That's what it means. That's what the Shlomo says. Yeah. Of course, what it's not a fantasy. I don't understand what you don't understand. What's wrong?
First, it tells you our mind that it's within our mind. It's a perception of our mind.
The visibility is a perception of our mind. The visibility is a perception of our mind.
Regarding what we spoke about 2 weeks ago, you were saying about Eir Hashem and Meir, whether it's Eir Hashem or it's Meir Shalik Alaleh.
No.
It seems like there's a theory.
Yeah.
Someone said that maybe that that's the Eir Hashem and Meir, which brings about the Meir Shalik Alaleh.
He said, yeah.
So from Perek Tezvav, the Zayin is Mashmazi, because it says over here,
he says it in Yud Gimel.
And over here also, he says.
Yeah, but in Yud Beis he doesn't say that. Look in Yud Beis. Yud Beis says B'tivoy. In Yud Beis in an Aleph he says B'tivoy. That's the problem. There's another in you. You're right. From Yud Gimel he says that. But Yud Beis in an Aleph he says B'tivoy. Avada. Shleimusa de Kula. Avada Sakayim says, Kashem Shesh Lekerich Bibligvul.
That's why I understand. There could be fragments. Why can't it be? If God wanted it, it could not be. That's the true unity. That's not the true unity.
And that I can't argue with. But that was a state. I can't argue with you.
That's the way it is.
Kashem shesh lekech begvul, kach yesh lekech begvul. Kach yesh lekech begvul. Avan. Gvul is not a chiddush of the world. Kashem shesh lekech begvul, kach yesh lekech begvul. But his kech begvul is part and parcel of his kech begvul. Mashenkin in the world, you perceive the gvul. This world perceives this type of gvul, and this type of gvul, that type of gvul. You don't get the whole picture. No, Teda Mitzvahs is
connected to that.
What he wrote to me, there's a little more to it. He republished Sefer Mir Es Sfiris.
Rabbi Eshlank.
No. He's not sure about Rabbi Eshlank. That's the point. That doesn't say he doesn't hold it. He's not sure. He holds that there are four basic well-known derachim of understanding Kitvei Ari, and anything outside of that.
Who?
He holds of the Baal Shem Tov, the Gaon of Vilna, the Ramchal, and the Rashash. He says anything outside of that, he doesn't get, you know.
Sharabi, the Pshalom Sharabi.
Right. Anything outside of that, he's not like this. But anyways, he doesn't know that, that's all, you know. He told me, no, but the Beer Sisri is written by the Rebbe of the Ramban in Kabbalah. Who was it again? From Rebbe Israel. Who taught the Ramban Kabbalah? Rebbe Israel Migeroyma.
No.
He wrote Beer Sisri. So Rebbe Schatz published it. In there, there's a footnote that Rebbe Schatz brought this book for Sharam in.
I see.
So I have to look at
about cellular differentiation.
Yeah. But he cautions me that Rebbe Chaim Vital did not have a word for cells. So he uses the word vereda.
What is the theme of cellular differentiation in science?
Every first thing is that every part of the body has every other part in it. The basic genetic theory. And that what happens is that the cells have to make a tzimtzum to decide what part of the body to become. They have to specialize. It's like a tzimtzum. Human being goes through life. He has to, career-wise, he has to be mitzvah.
It's because naturally they're uniform. Why?
Right, because naturally they're uniform. Naturally each cell could become anything.
Any part of the body.
Right, so when the child is forming inside the mommy, this cell says I have to become an eye cell. That cell says I have to become a finger cell.
Got it.
You know? And the whole process of how that happens.
And when was that revealed in science?
It couldn't have been earlier than 50 years ago, my understanding.
Not early 1900s, I think.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Somebody asked me now.
Yeah.
Somebody asked. He asked one of the Bachrim. He asked if this is a contradiction to individualism, this whole chapter. Because he thought individualism means everybody can really be free to exercise their own individualism. But if we're saying that Torah and mitzvahs are the brain of the cosmic body, so he says, where is there room for individualism? Basically, the body doesn't have a free choice but to follow the instructions of the brain. But in truth, this doesn't compromise individualism. On the contrary, Torah and mitzvahs allow you to maximize your individualism. Because what does really individualism mean? Individualism means becoming in tune with who you really are, not defining your status or your agenda or your lifestyle based on conventional outside forces or pressures, but rather being truly truthful to your own real identity, expressing yourself, maximizing your talents, your resources, your potentials. That's what individualism is, right?
Heeding the call of the higher self.
Heeding the call of the real inner self, right. So now imagine if a hand says, you know, I want to be an individual, and therefore what I'm going to start doing is I'm going to stop using my hand as a hand. Rather, I'm going to start using my hand as an eye. So what is That's individualism. I want to do whatever I want. I want to become an eye. So the hand is going to start looking at anything, but the heart is not going to do anything. He's just going to move with his hand. He's going to put his hand in front of his eyes. Because my hands became eyes. He's going to put his hands in front of his eyes. And he's going to look at everything with his hands. And he's going to try to do everything with his eyes. So if he has to turn a doorknob, he's going to do it with his eye. But if he has to see something, he's going to do it with his hand. So if this person crosses the street, why? He's an individual. Individualism means not self-destruction. Individualism means you remain truthful to the particular anatomy and function and mission of that individual. A hand is the most individual when it works as a hand. Why? Because it's doing what it really is. And the same is true concerning life. We all seek to be individuals and we want to express our individualism. Does Torah and mitzvahs repress it or does Torah and mitzvahs enhance it? If you say Torah and mitzvahs is not a brain, it represses it. It's basically a superimposed code coming from a king. In this case, it's God, a monarch, who conquers our city, defeats the government, and says, you are now my subject, you are now my slave. What Alter Rebbe is saying is you don't understand what Torah and mitzvahs is. Torah and mitzvahs is a brain. It's your brain. Your brain means it gives you the opportunity to maximize your potentials in the maximum way. It doesn't repress you. It may prohibit certain things because that allows you to cultivate those elements that will express you most, just as the brain does to a body. It doesn't inhibit the hand, the brain. It doesn't allow the hand to do anything. Of course, it tells the hand, don't put the hand in fire. So it's robbing the hand from individualism, the brain. On the contrary, it wants that the hand should be able to thrive, to be able to live up to its potential. So it says to the hand, be careful, don't go into fire. That same is true with Torah. Torah will say, don't do this, you're not allowed to do this. Because it wants the person to be an individual. And yeah, I think that's also included in what Alter Rebbe is saying.
Sure, it reminds me of a story I was reading once, a Hasidic story where a Rebbe had a person who was a Baal Bas and a wealthy supporter. The person decided to develop a scholarly bent and started learning and joined the ranks of the scholar. The Rebbe told him, that's not your place. Your place is to be the businessman. He says, you're in big trouble if you move over.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but the question is, how, in a world where one doesn't have that, you know, a Rebbe clearly saying, you belong here, you belong there, you belong anywhere, how does one really know this place?
It's sometimes hard. Hashem etzadet gever keinanu. Well, that's why Chassidim always wanted a Rebbe. That's why Chassidim always wanted a Rebbe, because the brain could just tell you, you belong here, you belong here.
Yeah, you know.
What happens is, if you don't have a Rebbe physically, so I guess Hashem gives kayach that you should be able
to know it.
Still remain connected, yeah, and well, get your directions, yeah. I mean, you have to work harder, Mustama. You have to work harder. You have to stimulate your connection with the brain.
Right.
Which is also in therapy sometimes, they stimulate the body, that the body, through its own endeavor, so to speak, stimulates a greater connection with the brain. That itself, nothing is without the brain. That's part of it, yeah. Yeah, but in this period it's not the tzaddik. In this period it's Torah and mitzvahs. In chapter 2 it's the Rosh Yalfi Yisrael, Tamid
HaChacham. In
this period it's Torah and mitzvahs. But the whole idea is why does the tzaddik have kayach? Because he becomes one with Torah and mitzvahs. He doesn't have a separate kayach. There's no tzaddik and Torah and mitzvahs. You see it from Tanya the whole time. The entire power of a Rebbe is Torah and mitzvahs. He's so permeated with Torah and mitzvahs. So he becomes a channel for division of Torah and division of mitzvahs. It's not there's two brains in the world. Torah and mitzvahs is one brain, and the tzaddik is another brain. A child with two brains is not in a good situation. Pshat is, the tzaddik, the Torah is ink and parchment. The tzaddik's flesh and blood embodies the ink and parchment of Torah. He becomes a Torah in flesh and blood. What's written in a book becomes written in his heart. But it's the same. His whole identity becomes permeated with Torah. That's the word. It's not like the Rebbe is one brain and Torah Mitzvahs is another brain. It's the same in
you. You remember, the man who never.
Lieberman. Hillel Lieberman. Hashem Yonkim Dame, yeah.
Thank you.
Once he took me to Shechem and to his home, and he told me, and we were talking, I came up with the story of Levi Yitzchak Barditchev. I told him the story of Levi Yitzchak Barditchev, who he said to Hashem, listen, you put the Torah in a book and you put the tithes in the veld. So what do you expect your children to do? So, you know, if it had been the other way around, you know, life would have been fine. You know,
right.
It would have been...
So
Hillel Lieberman told me, so no, that's what we have to do. We have to put the Torah in the veld. That's our job.
Very good.
We have to take it out of the book and put it in the veld.
Do it one way.
Right, exactly. No, well, he was only talking about doing it one way. He said,
his Kiddush Hashem was from the most publicized in history.
It's just very painful to me because, you know, I knew him personally. I was personally in his trailer. You know,
he lived in Shechem.
He lived in Elon Moreh, overlooking Shechem. He taught, and a lot of these towns have two names. You know, like you have Kiryat Arba and you have Hebron. You know, the names Torah gives the city two names. So now, in Eretz Yisrael, you have like a nearby town with a second name. And he explained that Rav Yitzchak Ginsburg explains, of course, now the. Because it's one is expression of the panemius and one is expression of the chitzonius. You know, in other words, the two aspects are now getting its own individual complete expression.
Mm-hmm.
But he lived in Elon Moreh overlooking Shechem, and it was, you know, I mean, to me, I could see him doing it, what he did. It's you know, what's it called? I knew him personally, so to understand that a wife with so many kids are now. You know, without a man in the house, and to understand
they're still living in Elon Mara, his family.
I don't know. I didn't keep that close tabs to understand that. You know, what's it called? That you know, let me explain it to you. It was he lived, breathed the whole inyan of settling in Eretz Yisrael. He told me personally, it came to a point in his life, his college years, where he just could not picture living anywhere else. Could not picture living anywhere else. It like made no sense to live anywhere else. Nowhere else was where a Jew belonged.
Yeah.
You know. Alibi, we should all have that kind
of. What are we doing here?
So Tapka, he had a shiloh with that. He was asking me to come join. What? To him, I told him, listen, you know, I have a friend of mine who lived in Eretz Yisrael, and of course the circumstances ended up coming back to Florida. I told him, you know, it's not, you know, we don't really have control over where we live on some level. It's,
yeah.
You know, we're put places. We think we have control, but we're really put places. We're like horns. I said, you know, Hashem wants it. I'll live there. You know, I'll live where, in Eretz Yisrael. But that, you know, I don't know how to explain it to you. The brand and the fire for Eretz Yisrael inside of it. He didn't make peace with that. I want to explain to you. He paid lip service. That might be a philosophy, but he didn't make peace with it.
You want to ask something? You want to ask something?
And he was in the right place. What should I say? The right place is that a yid should not make peace with that. He has to live outside Eretz Yisrael, even if he has to live outside.
When was he killed? Before Yom Kippur, or when was it?
It was.
Sir Shemay Trova. Yeah, go ahead. It's mamish. Mamish means it's mamish. It's chelik.
Anyways, I have a phone call to take care of.
Thank you so much. See you next week. Bruchim
Tei. Ashiv, you could say, the way he's saying now, in Aleph says in an Aleph, that it's really Atzmus, so it's mamish Atzmus. How does it reconcile with Dalet, where he says that Torah mitzvahs is much higher than the Sha'ai Bokhtir Amar Chalik? The word you can answer another kasha. How could he say that when we do an Aveda, it's like we take an Aleph and you bury it? What do you mean? Your neshama l'chayr is not not a chelik of kamehameha. So how is that sort of right as it is? It's a part, but tarei mitzvahs is different. Is you can't affect tarei mitzvahs. That's part of that's somehow a part of the eibishter that you can't affect at all tarei mitzvahs. And that's much higher than the neshama, which is something that you could at least you could affect. But avad it's chelik of kamehameha. So that's why it's atzmis.
I hear, but I'm saying how good for that this you could affect, this you can't affect. I mean, it's a different Indian.
So you're saying it's not what?
So it's not. You're saying it's not the same. You're saying it in these words. What you're also saying is not the same.
You're saying so. Is Nishkein? You're saying that. So what? What is the problem that there's a chelik of the?
The lashon in other places is that it's mamish. The reason it's called chelik is because it's like a ben hanimshach meyachav. What's a ben? A ben is mamish with mayachav. It's not like mayachav. A ben doesn't have another mitzvah besides the father and the mother. There's a part of the physical part of the. It turns into another mitzvah. But there was a time when the ben was not another mitzvah. When that seed was part of the father's body, and before the father produced those chemicals in his brain that ultimately produces the seed was an inseparable part of the brain chemicals. One second. And it was part of the cell and the soul of the body. And the chiddush is that even when the ben becomes a metzius b'fnei atzmai, still remains connected, still retains a oneness, and forever. That's the vart. But ultimately, it leaves the father's domain, so to speak, and it becomes a separate metzius to the extent that you look at it, and it's hard sometimes to find the relationship. Torah and mitzvahs, in Lashon HaChassidus, that's why it's called chelik. Chelik is because it's kevayachal. Why is it apart? Vasist's apart. It's divisible. So the pshat is, it's like a marshal. What you want to bring out apart is that it's that inyan, but it's in that inyan as it becomes another mitzvahs. Mashengen Torah and mitzvahs remains a lakus. It's not another mitzvahs. It's not the ben as it leaves the father, becomes a child. It's the father itself. It's a different vart. The father is converted into another mitzvah. The world is created by the father. Child is the father is converted into another mitzvah, so to speak. Torah is the father itself.
So then you have the two kashas that remain.
So you're asking with etzem.
And also then how could if somebody punches a kid, so he's not hitting the child. He's not hitting the father.
Well, that... Now, obviously, there's a chilik of the Gashem. The Gashem is in the Ruchni is there. I mean, the Gashem is you don't have that, but he says in Pedig Beis already that the child's nails are connected to his brain, and his brain always remains connected to his father's brain.
It always retains, it says in the lesson, it always retains from the
original Mayachav. It says in Chassidus that you see that children think very often like their parents. He'll think like his father. Now, there's a certain connection retained. However, you're going to touch it in Gashmis, but in Ruchni, that connection is retained. Mashenken and Teda, it never left. And that's why Divrei Teda ain't a Mekablum Tumma, what you're saying. Because Teda Lechatchila never became a Nivra. You can't affect it. It remains in the divine Rishus. The union of Etzim, you can ask another Shaila. Even if you say it's Chelik Alekamimam Mamash, even if you say it's like Teda. He says, why is Teda Kulachad? Because Teda is Chachmasi, is Baruch Hanu v'Chachmasi Yachad. But Chachmasi is already Chachmasi Etzem. Even if it's Mamish, it's not Chelik, it's like Teda. So you have to say that Chachmad Atzila, since Hu v'Chachmasi Yachad, so maybe that's called Etzem, it's not Mishalik. That's called Etzem. Right? Now, in Pedig Beis, he says that in Hashem is Nimshach mi'Chachmasi is Baruch. And Huvu Chachmasa Yechad. So however you'll explain Huvu Chachmasa Yechad B'negei Teir, you explain it B'negei the Neshama. And that's true that it's an etzim built in Mishalik. You understand what I'm saying? You don't have to create a contradiction. Forget about the contradiction with Teir. In Pedig Beis he says, just like a ben is Nimshach HaMeichav, Kach Nishmas Kolish Yisrael Nimshach HaMachshavti V'Chachmasa Yisbarach. It's not a regular chachma. It's not a known chachma. Ella, hu v'chachmasa yachad k'mashakasav haramba. So, since hu v'chachmasa yachad, And that's where the neshama comes from. So mel the neshama is chelik alakami mal, because huva chachma seyecha. The neshama comes from chachma. Then he says that the chachma is nishtavshel through many worlds, and therefore there are many different types of neshamas, but whatever. So b'meila, since huva chachma seyechat, so that's not called the visible, because it's not like chachma debriyu. You don't say huva chachma seyechat, and atzilis you say he's one with his chachma. In other words, the tzir of chachma is not a divisible tzir. It's echad with him. And he says, Dover ze'em b'yichaylas adam la'vini al-buryay. So b'meila, the neshama comes from there. So even though the neshama becomes a nivir, it still retains that quality, so to speak. And that quality means that it's indivisible.
Why did he end up saying
that's l'chura, that's how I understand it.
So how come he talked about he put an older maichet here in this chapter? Why did it just chachma? Why didn't he say that the brain is nimshel of chachma of the Eberstein? How did he start with the das and the bina?
Only Chachma? Because in Perek Nun Aleph he doesn't speak only Chachma, he talks about the entire brain. In the Mashle he doesn't talk only about Chachma, he doesn't say the Neshama is Sheir in Chachma, he says the Neshama is Sheir in the Meyach Sheberash. So it's Kael all the Keiches.
But from the fact that the Neshama is Etzem.
No, that's not a Stira. It's Sheir in Chachma bin Adas. You're mixing the mashal and the nimshal, two separate things. The physical brain is just a mashal. We're not talking about that. The neshama is shared in the physical brain. Vasa is just shared in the physical brain. It's not the etzem is shared there. The etzem is shared everywhere, also there. What the nizgala there is the chelik, the chayis of the neshama, which is shaykh to the guf. So what he's going to bring out here is the same meaning. The Ein Sof itself is not Mizgal and Chachma bin Adas of Teda.
The will is also Mizgal through the brain.
Yeah. Everything is through the brain. I thought you asked me something else. If Chachma bin Adas is Teda and Huva Chachma say Echad, so L'cha'ura, over here you have a metzias that in the mayach there is the gili of the Ein Sof in this type of mayach. Because it's Torah and mitzvahs. You understand what I'm saying? It's the chura not like in the mashal.
Your mind becomes one with the
Torah
and mitzvahs.
No, because of hu chachmas yachan, and that's Torah. So that means Torah is from the Ein Sof. It transcends the indivisibility. That's the whole mahalach and tanya, that Torah and mitzvahs
is
the Ein Sof itself. It's not the Eid Ein Sof. Same thing, Torah.
With the other thing, when you learn Torah, the Seichel's Melubish in the Torah, the Torah Melubish in the Seichel, that Torah that's
Melubish in the
Seichel is
Ein Sof. Yeah.
It's invisible.
So L'chura, the Marshal, is not like the Nimshal. That's a good Shaila. So Taka later in the Pedig is going to explain that in Torah there's two elements. There's the Torah how we experience it, and the Torah how we experience it is a brain. It's like the brain in the sense that it is a levush for the Shechina. It's a levush for the Shechina. You can learn Torah your whole life. You don't sense Ein Sof. You don't feel Ein Sof. You don't get swallowed up in Ein Sof. Torah has qualities about it that totally conceal that. But in the Shadish, it's taka higher than the level. In that the physical brain is not a mashal. Yeah, al derech. It's very interesting, actually, how it works. No. Well, next week we'll be Meirich in all of this.
Yeah, but it doesn't have the same power there as what we learned way back when, that your mom is connected with the Meirich of the Eivishtin, because there's still a difference. Then, right? But before, your mom is...
Depends. He's being Meirich different in Yonam, you know.
Your mom is Shaili.
Say the same thing that the other Flakim would say, you're supposed to be deceived, but I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's not shy. The whole thing is not shy. I'll just say that we have even a connection with the Chachmasi Yisbar. It's not shy. It invented what the whole idea of what Chachma is. Invented as Azazel.
To order additional MP3 CDs, call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076 or visit us at www.chassidus.com. That is chassidus.com.